Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our Sunday morning weekly gathering. It's very, very good to see you all. And, of course, happy Valentine's Day. The day that is symbolic of love. And the way I remember Valentine's Day from elementary school is it wasn't symbolic of loving a special person. I think now that I'm all grown up, the only person I really give a Valentine's Day card to is Ron, and I'm sure I'm the only one he gives a card to. But as a kid, remember we gave Valentine's Day cards to everyone. Our ego sometimes picked out the cards we liked the least and gave them to the people we liked the least, so there was still a bit of specialness there. But the general idea of sharing love with everyone is a wonderful idea, so it's a great day to celebrate. So happy Valentine's Day, everyone. We're going to greet one another now so we can express that general sharing of love as I play the traditional song for this time, Awakening by Deva, Pramel, and Mitten. So everyone, please enjoy sharing love with one another. We are, of course, gathering today as awakening together. That means that our shared purpose is awakening to one true self. We are an assembly of equals joined in that common purpose. And today, as I share, I will be highlighting our third core value. We accept one true self, which is one presence or being, non-dual, without beginning or end, and absolutely changeless. We live this value by practicing letting go of the belief in the individual self as who we are. Before we get to that, however, I have some announcements to share. First of all, I want to thank Vicky Poppy for volunteering to host the 8 a.m. meditation on Tuesday mornings, that is 8 a.m. Eastern Time. We are still looking for volunteers to host Monday morning, Thursday morning, and Friday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. If you're someone who shows up for the 8 a.m. meditation anyway, please consider hosting one of these, again, Monday, Thursday, or Friday. And when you host, no pressure. It's wonderful to lead a guided meditation if you want to, but you can also just play music. Oh, okay, good. So Cheryl says she's volunteered for Mondays. Yeah, wonderful. Wonderful, Cheryl. Thank you. So I want to thank Cheryl and Vicki. So that means that we are left with Thursday and Friday, correct? Wonderful. Thank you. Okay, and Gloria says she'll take Thursday. Gosh, now I feel like I'm at an auction. Going, going, going. All right, so Gloria will take Thursday. Lynn, make sure you write that down. So now it looks like we have Monday, 8 a.m. with Cheryl. Tuesday, 8 a.m. with Vicki. Wednesday, 8 a.m. with Regina. Thursday, 8 a.m. with Gloria. We're just looking for someone to host Friday morning at 8 a.m. Thank you very much, everyone. It's wonderful that Lynn doesn't have a commitment that early in the morning. That's 6 a.m. our time. So if she's up, that's great. But if she's running around doing something, that's great, too. She doesn't have to make it to the computer. And that's what we want to do, give her a little bit of freedom there. And, in fact, the next thing I want to talk to you about is giving Lynn even more freedom. I have a vision. And my vision is giving Lynn a day off. I take a day off. I take off on Saturdays. And we've talked to Lynn, and we would like to give Lynn off on Wednesdays. So one thing that would make it a lot easier is if we can fill up the schedule on Wednesdays so Lynn doesn't need to play audios during open time slots, that kind of thing. And actually, Wednesdays are pretty close to full. In fact, Lynn has called them Wake Up Wednesdays because they are so close to full. We do need someone for the 1 p.m. Eastern Time slot. That's a full hour slot. We also need someone for the 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time slot. That's a 30-minute slot. And then again at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for an hour. If we could get people to take just a total of 2.5 hours, if we could get people to take those 2.5 hours of open air time, it would be much easier to give Lynn that day off. Again, the times that we're looking for people are 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Wednesdays. That would be, what, a 10 a.m. Pacific, I believe. 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and again, the 3:30 slot is only 30 minutes, and that would be 12:30 Pacific. And then 6 p.m. Eastern Time for an hour, that is 3 p.m. Pacific. So, yeah, Cheryl is saying she will call, so that's great. Yeah, I was telling Lynn, no one should have to work 7 days a week. Everyone should get a day off. So let's see if we can't work together to give Lynn Wednesdays off. Shall we do that? That can be our gift to Lynn. She does so much for us. We can give back to her. Also, I want to remind you that Dove has discount tickets available for the ACIM conference in Las Vegas from April 8 to 10. Usually when people get inspired to go to that conference at the last minute, they have to pay big bucks because that price continues to go up. But Dove does have discount tickets. So if you are inspired to go to the ACIM conference in April 8th to 10th in Las Vegas, please save yourself some money and contact Dove. He says his tickets are $475 instead of the present price of $599. His email is hdfishman@aol.com. hdfishman@aol.com. And then one other little bitty announcement. For those of you who are interested in the movie group, remember, the movie group is going to be meeting on the fourth Sunday of every month at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And we have an assignment. from our leader, Jacqueline Eckert. And that is this month to watch the movie Lovely Still. So I want to remind you that you have 2 weeks left to watch that movie if you haven't yet. So Lovely Still is the movie that we are all watching together this month. And now what I'm going to do is play our opening song. The name of this song is The Source by Jane Winther. Let's follow that song by going into a moment of silence, and I will bring us out of the silence with prayer. Jehovah, the Christian name for God, is an English translation of the Hebrew name Yahweh. Yahweh means I am that I am. Or even more specifically translated, Yahweh means is. When I was new to the spiritual path, I was in contemplation once of a workbook lesson in A Course in Miracles. And a clarity came to me through the voice of the Holy Spirit. And that clarity was that there was only one word in the entire English language that had true meaning. And that word is. I remember I wrote the word is on my whiteboard in my office, very large that day, and every opportunity I had, I sat and stared at it. Is. Yahweh. Jehovah. I am that I am. The only word that has any meaning. The only truth. I also learned through my study of A Course in Miracles that I believed I was separate from God, and indeed I did. But as I contemplated the one word with meaning, I came to see that separation is impossible. Is the only truth. And although it is improper English, I is. Therefore, it cannot be separate. But even more than that, when Moses asked God, "Who shall I say sent me?" God replied, "Yahweh. I am that I am. Is." If God is, and I is, there's more than not separation. There's oneness. One essence. One is. And we are all it. Please help us to realize this essence that we more than share. Amen. And with that, I'm going to turn the mic over to Cher Murphy, and she will share from our reading today, which is an excerpt from Rupert Spira's book, The Transparency of Things, and he has titled this excerpt, Our True Body. Cher, the mic is yours.
Good morning, everyone, and happy Valentine's Day. And Regina, I'm just going to share a little bit from my heart first, and then I'll do the reading. So it's really good to be here with everybody. And I do have to make sure that I don't get too excited about Valentine's Day, because I seem to get attached to these special days, and I go like bonkers, because my little highly sensitive empath soul seems to want to make something of these days. And I remember Muji saying that, please don't give, or somebody did, I don't know, I get so mixed up these days. Somebody said, please don't give special meaning to your delusions, you know, special days. So anyway, we know that nothing I see means anything, and I give it all the meaning. So I'm really excited about being ordained in the 13 days. And I'm trying not to get triggered and run to my energy habits. A couple of weeks ago when I was studying for the test, I went back and and my mom's sister died. And so I don't want to do this. So I got really excited and anxious. And I don't want the same thing to happen for this exciting trip that's coming up and this exciting journey that we're all on. So I get that this is truly about mind training. I do seem to have an autoimmune disease. But through this, I'm learning so much about myself. You know, I've never really been able to sit with myself. Even through this class with Regina, it was really hard, but I did it. And so I'm really, really proud. I'm very excited. So I just came to this revelation, though, that my body and brain go into an inflammatory state when my heart is in constant pain. And I'm unable to embrace that pain with conscious awareness and love of this precious soul. I know it started in hot childhood. There's no excuses. I don't want to go back. But I realize that if I don't catch these thoughts, then I go into the chronic pain body. And I've been feeling that pain all these years with energy habits that have really turned into mass destruction now. So you got to laugh. And that was my favorite thing that I learned from David years ago. You just got to laugh. Finally willing to be one holy instant to embrace this achy, breaky heart in conscious awareness and true willingness. One of my favorite things that I remember from the last 2 years in the class was true devotion. And I'm just really listening to that true devotion to myself and to the universe and to accept things at a very, very deep level. That's what I learned, and I love that. When I go into my spasms, I'm like, I need to accept this at a very, very deep level. So I'm praying continuously for victory over my own viciousness thoughts. I'm so excited about the journey that we're on, beloved ones. I can't wait to see some of you in Pueblo and Las Vegas. So we are truly being reborn. My mantra these days is you can't fail unless you quit. Okay, now this awesome reading, and I'm going to get off the mic as soon as I get through, and Regina's going to do her magic on this lesson. Okay, our true body. Experience always takes place now, in the present, so if we want to explore the nature of reality, all we have is the current experience. In this current experience, we have all the information that is needed to understand the nature of ourselves and of reality, because both we, whatever we are, and reality, whatever it is, are present. All that is necessary is to stick very closely to our actual experience and not rely on concepts or ideas from the past about the way we think things are. It's just what I was saying. We have to come very cleanly to this exploration of experience and only permit that which we know for ourselves to be true. In this moment, there's something that is being experienced. We may not know what that something is. For instance, it may be a dream or a hallucination. But we know that there's something. There is something that is known, that is the body, mind, world, and there is something, that which we refer to as the I, that is experiencing or knowing the known. These two, these apparent two, the experienced and the experiencer, the known and the knower, the perceived and the perceiver are in fact always one seamless totality. They are not two things in our actual experience. However, we tend to focus mainly, if not exclusively, on the objective aspect of the seamless totality. In most cases, our attention is primarily occupied with thoughts, images, feelings, sensations, that is, with the mind, the body, and the world. By contrast, in these contemplations, we focus on the subjective aspect of experience rather than the objective aspect. We give our attention to the perceiver rather than the perceived. In spite of the fact that experience is always one seamless totality, we artificially separate the perceiver from the perceived, the experiencer from the experienced, the subjective aspect of experience from the objective aspect. The purpose of doing this is to draw attention to the subjective aspect, to the knower, the perceiver, the experiencer, to the presence of consciousness, which witnesses whatever it is that is being experienced from moment to moment. Normally, we are so absorbed in the objective aspect of experience that we overlook the presence of consciousness within and behind every experience. Consciousness, or that to which we refer to as the I, is that which perceives or experiences. It is that which witnesses the mind, the body, and the world. It is that which is seeing and understanding these words right now. In this moment, something is being experienced, and whatever that something is, whether it's in the mind, the body, the world, it's being perceived or experienced by consciousness, by that which we call I, or me. This consciousness is an undeniable fact of our experience. Even the denial of consciousness requires consciousness. However, we have forgotten that the real nature of this I, of ourself, is consciousness, the present that is witnessing and experiencing whatever it is that is being experienced in this moment. This presence of consciousness stands alone, independent of the objects of the mind, body, and world that appear to it. Excuse me. In the same way that a mirror stands alone, independent of whatever is reflected within it. However, we have confused and identified this witnessing consciousness with the body, the mind, and as a result, we have to come to think and feel that this I is something, that it is a body-mind. The body, mind, and world are all equally objects of consciousness. However, having mistakenly identified consciousness with the body-mind, we have transferred the status of subject, which probably belongs to consciousness alone, onto the body-mind. In this way, we have come to think and feel that it is the I, as the body-mind, which experiences this world. However, the body-mind does not witness or experience anything. It is in itself witness experience. We experience the mind, the thoughts and images, the body, the sensations, in just the same way that we experience the world, our sense perceptions. Almost done. Each of these experiences is equally an object of consciousness. The mind and the body are no less objects of consciousness than in this world. In this way, we return the mind and the body in our own understanding to their proper place as objects of consciousness along with the world. And by giving the mind and the body back to the objective realm, we are, by the same token, returning to the I in our understanding to consciousness. In our contemplation, we give attention to this witnessing consciousness. All that means is that we abide as this witnessing consciousness knowingly. That is, this consciousness abides in itself as itself knowingly. Amen, and so it is. Love you guys.
Thank you very much, Cher. So, a primary message in the reading that Cher just shared is that we have confused consciousness, which is what we are, with the body-mind. And therefore we think, I am a body, or I am a mind, or both. I am the body-mind. I am this person is the way that I refer to it. I am this person. We think, I am this person. And so one of the things that Rupert Spira recommends in the Transparency of Things is that we investigate this confusion with our own direct experience and find out if it's true or if it's false. In other words, the question is, am I this body? Am I this mind? Am I this person? I remember when I first started this investigation myself. It was in 2012. In fact, let me just tell you a brief personal story. Some of you may know that I went to India in December of 2011 and As I sat on the plane getting ready to leave India and return here, I received guidance for a year of increased silence. And I also received guidance, simultaneous guidance, to contemplate the 7 steps to awakening during that year of increased silence. And that's what 2012 was for me. What you might not know about that story, even if you know that story, is that while I was in India in December of 2011, when I was in the room, I was reading Rupert Spira's book, The Transparency of Things. So this book, you could say, was my education that taught me how to go into 2012, a year of investigation, knowing how to investigate. The truth is, my spiritual path up until this point had not been direct experience investigation, and I didn't even know what direct experience investigation was. And I wouldn't be surprised if there are people here that really don't know what direct experience investigation is. For example, right now, my hands are a little cold. And once upon a time, I would have said, that's a direct experience. I am directly experiencing my cold hands. But what I learned through the combination of reading Rupert Spira's book, The Transparency of Things, and through my own investigation in 2012, which was very slow. Remember, it was a year of being silent for usually 7 hours a day, I'll say 5 to 7 hours a day, and just sitting and investigating for a whole year. What I learned through that is that the body is never a direct experience. The body is perceived. Direct experience does not involve perception. I also learned the mind. The mind, what my mind thinks, is not a direct experience. It is perceived. I came to see the only thing that is direct experience. The only thing that is direct experience is even prior to subject-object awareness, which Rupert Spira speaks of here as the knower and the known, the perceiver and the perceived. It's what God referred to as Yahweh. But one of the things we do on this spiritual path is we read books and we listen to teachings. And when we read books and when we listen to teachings, all of that information goes in through the mind. And the mind thinks about it, and the mind interprets it, and the mind makes decisions about it, whether the mind chooses to accept it or not accept it. And we can accept mentally ideas like, I am all that is, right? I am God, I am Christ consciousness, I am spirit. But you know what? Those ideas are not direct experience. Those ideas are concepts. What Rupert Spira asks us to do is to put aside all concepts. That would include these spiritual concepts that have been helpful to us. There's no doubt. You know, when I started the spiritual path, I thought, without knowing it because it was denied, so it wasn't a conscious thought. That's one of the things that Course in Miracles really did, was bring a lot of stuff out of denial so that it could be looked at, right? But I thought, I am cruel. That was my definition, and I am unworthy. In fact, I am the scum of the earth. I would say those were my two primary definitions. I am the scum of the earth and I am cruel. So going from those mental concepts to concepts like I am spirit were very helpful bridges. But it's still going from concept to concept. And we don't realize truth through concepts ever. So even though some concepts can be helpful for a time, there comes a time when we need to be willing to go beyond all concepts. And that's direct experience investigation, as Rupert Spira recommends in The Transparency of Things. And in fact, those of you who have taken the Minister Preparation Program, one of the classes that is taught in the Minister Preparation Program is called Understanding Purification. And the textbook that we use, many of you will be familiar with this book, the textbook that we use is The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. And those of you who have taken MPP, if you go back and you look at your workbook for that class, you'll notice at the very end, when I say, if you enjoyed this and you want more, and I recommend something else, what I recommend is The Transparency of Things by Rupert Spira. Because once you've truly gone through the purification that is recommended by the teaching in The Untethered Soul, it's also the same purification that is recommended in A Course in Miracles and in the Holy Spirit's interpretation of the New Testament. But it's just so clear and simple in The Untethered Soul. And I'm not talking about once you've read the book. I'm saying once you've gone through that purification process, once you've learned to be open with everything, once you've learned not to close down and repress and resist, but just allow and allow and allow. When you've really become a master of the untethered soul, you're ready for the transparency of things. You're ready for direct experience investigation. But one of the first things you may need to learn is what that direct experience investigation is, because you have probably never done it in your entire life, ever. You've thought when your hands are cold that that cold on your hands is a direct experience. You've thought as you felt emotions in your body like anxiousness or guilt or fear or jealousy or depression, you've thought that those are a direct experience. When your mind is chattering about whatever the heck it's chattering about, you've thought that that is a direct experience. And none of those are direct experiences. But it's not helpful to take this on intellectually. It's only helpful to see it for yourself. It's helpful to see they are not direct. They are indirect. They are objects of perception. So today, what I'd like to do, for those of you who really do not know what direct experience investigation is I would like to try and just lead us through a few exercises that might help you begin to sense that. Of course, a few exercises in 10 or 15 minutes aren't enough. Direct experience investigation needs to extend to everything in your life. But through direct experience investigation, you become very, very, very clear on the only thing that is a direct experience. There's only one direct experience. And you also become very, very clear that that's what you are. It's the only thing you cannot separate yourself from. And therefore, it must be what you are. So let's begin with a very simple direct experience investigation. And those of you who know me well and have been through my classes and have been to my retreats have done this one before. But there are people in the room who haven't had that experience. So let's start with the basics and go from there. So for some of you, it's a repeat. For some of you, it is not. I'm going to ask you to do something in just a moment. And the thing I'm going to ask you to do is going to create a bit of pain. Please do not be afraid of the pain for the few seconds that we're going to be doing this investigation, because the pain is an important part of the investigation. If you shy away from the pain, you may not see what it is I'm hoping that you will see. What I'd like you to do is pinch a place on your finger that is sensitive. For me, it's the tip, near the tip, not quite the tip. It's about a quarter inch below the tip. But when I pinch it with my fingernails, it hurts. Find some place on your finger. For some people, it's lower. It's closer to the middle of the finger or even the bottom of the finger. But find a place on your finger that is sensitive. There's lots of nerve endings in the fingers. You should be able to do that. And then pinch it till it hurts. And let it hurt. Let it hurt. Pinch it as hard as you can. And you'll feel the pain. Keep feeling it. It's not going to kill you. Now pause for a moment. And look at the pain. Pause, kind of pull back, and look. If you pull back and look, what you will notice is the finger is feeling pain, but you, the looker, are not. You, the looker, feel no pain at all. It's like you can see the pain as an object. You can see the body as an object. But you are not feeling pain. When you're done with that, you can let go. If that exercise worked for you, it usually works for around 65 to 70% of the people who try it. If that exercise worked for you, what you just saw is that both the body and the pain that the body feels is something that you, the looker, perceive. The body is perceived. The pain is perceived. And you, the looker, are unaffected, although you can see it. You can experience it, but it's not a direct experience. It passes through some kind of a perceptual filter because you saw yourself as unaffected, as not feeling the pain, as the one observing. That self that you experienced, maybe only for a couple of seconds, but that self that you experienced that was observing the pain, that's direct experience. Every person here is having some kind of a bodily experience right now. I don't know what bodily experience it is. Like I said, my hands are a little cold. I can also feel my bum against the chair, and I can feel my back. There's a shawl I had on, and I let it drop, and so that shawl is at the middle of my back, between my back and the back of the chair. I can feel my feet on the ground. Everybody is having some kind of a bodily experience. I'd like you just to take a moment to find your current bodily experience. In fact, as you take a moment to look, you might notice things you weren't noticing. I just noticed a little bit of a tightness between my shoulder blades because I was leaning forward talking to you, and now I leaned back and I can feel that strain of having been leaning forward a moment ago. You might be having more than one bodily experience. If so, I'd like you just to pick one. Pick one thing to kind of tune your attention to. In fact, I'm going to go ahead and pick my bum against the chair. Just feeling that pressure that you feel with the bum against the chair. again, notice yourself looking at that. Look at the bum against the chair or whatever bodily experience you're looking at. Notice there's a you looking at it. Now, which one is the direct experience? Just ask yourself. Is the bodily experience your most direct experience? Or is the you that's looking at it closer, more direct? Which one is direct? And which one is actually indirect? Passing through something. Not something you can see. We call it perception. I call it a perceptual filter. If you like, shift to another bodily experience. Shift to something else. I'm sure you're having more than one experience at a time. My heart is open. I can feel an open heart in my chest. I'm shifting my attention to that. I would say that's a more pleasant experience. The bum against the chair for me was neutral. This is very pleasant. But what I notice when I look at the pleasant experience, when I inquire into it, is that there's two things happening. There's the experience, and there's the mind that's interpreting it as pleasant. And if I really inquire, really look, that's what the word inquire truly means. I notice that I can observe both. I can observe the open heart. And I can observe the mind interpreting it as pleasant. Again, what is the most direct experience? Is the bodily experience the closest thing to you? If you're having thoughts about your bodily experience, whether you interpret it as good or bad or whatever, are those thoughts the closest thing to you? Or is that observing that is happening? Is that the closest thing to you? If you could only pick one, if this was a test and you had to select the best answer, you weren't allowed to select more than one, you had to select the best answer, which one is a direct experience? Would it be the bodily experience, the mental interpretation, or the observing? You see, observing is the only direct experience. Everything else is perceived. Now, as you're currently seeing this, as you're currently aware of this, because often when we're out in the world, we get caught up in the objects of the world. Get caught up in the objects of our thoughts, and we we forget to be as aware as we are right now. So right now, while you're very, very aware that you're perceiving the body, and that you're perceiving the mind, and that you are that looking. You are the looking. While you're right now having that direct experience, can you honestly say, I am the body? Or is it more correct to say, I see the body? Look. Don't think. Don't remember what A Course in Miracles said. Look, right now. Notice your feet against the ground or whatever bodily experience you want to notice. Look at it. Are you the body or are you the looking? Which is more direct? And if you find that you're the looking and you're looking at the body, could you be that body out there that you're looking at? Or are you the intimate here looking? And of course, we can do the same thing with the mind, right? Right now, some of you may be experiencing an extremely still mind, because that can happen when you get into this looking. But if you turn your attention to the mind, it won't take long before something shows up. I always say the mind is like roaches. I used to live in Florida and near the ocean, and there were always roaches, even if you had a clean house. And when you'd walk into the kitchen and turn on the light, and you'd see the roaches, but they'd run and hide. Well, the mind is like that. When you turn your attention to the mind, thoughts often run and hide. For a second, it's still. But if we just wait for a moment, and I will, I'll be quiet and wait, some thinking will probably show up. There may even be a thought of, when am I going to have a thought? That itself is a thought. There may be a thought of, I don't get what she's talking about. I'm an idiot. That's a thought. Whatever thoughts are showing up, look at them just like you looked at the body. One way that's helpful to look at thoughts for people who are used to being engrossed in thoughts is just to simply ask the question, what is this thought? As soon as you ask, what is this thought? You become the looker. When you're able to have the experience of thought, and then you're able to have the experience of becoming the looker of thought, although thought is very close, and in fact, in my experience, I find thought to actually be closer than the body. Thought is very close. Because thought is very close, I think it makes it much more challenging to let go of thought. People say letting go of I am the body is the hardest thing of all, but actually I think letting go of I am the mind is harder. Somehow the mind seems even closer, so you have to become much better at looking. But can you see your thoughts? Even though they're close, they're right up against the nose. Can you see them? What sees them? Again, if this is a test and you're only allowed to select one answer, what's the best answer? I am the thoughts, or I am the looking? What I find in my experience is the thoughts are a very, very close, indirect experience, but not yet direct. Not as direct as the looking. And one thing that we can do, this is often called meditation, but when we become very, very aware of the looking, we can rest in the looking itself. It's often called awareness watching awareness, or just being. It's also called abiding as yourself. When you abide as the looker, you may see pain in the body. You may see illness in the body. But it's as if that pain or that illness is on a movie screen and you're in the audience. You see the pain, you know it's there, it doesn't need to be denied, but you can't honestly call it your pain. It's the body's pain. It's not a direct experience. When you look, when you inquire, the only direct experience you can find is being. The mind can completely go quiet. It doesn't often for most people, but it can. It might have happened for you today. As I asked you to look for thoughts, you may have found there were none. But were you still present when there were no thoughts? And if you were present when there were no thoughts, could you possibly be thought? What is that experience of being? That experience of looking? Can you look at it like you can a thought or like you can the body? Or is it more correct to say that just is? If it's more correct to say that just is, you have just discovered the meaning of the word Yahweh. It's the very back of all experience. The only true direct experience is, I mentioned that it's even before subject-object awareness. We're all experiencing subject-object awareness right now. But usually, within a 24-hour period, we also all experience a period of time when there is no subject-object experience. This is referred to as deep sleep. To the mind, which relies on subject-object experience for perception, deep sleep is like unconsciousness. But if you learn to really look, and you have to look beyond the mind, there is a knowing in you. It's not intellectual at all. But there's a knowing in you that in deep sleep, you were not dead. That you were still being, ising, present, granted without subject-object experience, but there. This being that is so fundamental that it's more fundamental than subject-object experience. This is Yahweh. And it would be impossible for you to deny that it's you. There's also a deep, deep peace that is naturally inherent in this ising. And when we learn to back ourselves up into the is as what we are, we're able to abide as that deep peace. This is often called enlightenment. But it is simply realizing the difference between what you are and what you are not. You are not the mind, you are not the body. You are the deep peace ising. And then being what you are instead of what you are not. Lynn says, is there a time or a place where I am not aware? Someone once said to me, in deep sleep, you are not aware. If you are not aware in deep sleep, what wakes up a mother when a child makes the smallest little sound? There's an alive awareness that is not subject-object awareness. See, we mistake subject-object awareness for awareness. But there is an awareness that precedes subject-object awareness. But even before awareness, there is ising. How can something be aware if it doesn't first is? And is, every time you check, you're going to find is your direct experience. And when you find the is, you find the deep peace of is. And if you abide in that deep peace of is, you abide as your true self. and that is regardless of whatever else may be going on. That is regardless of whatever else may be going on. Some of you may be feeling it now, the deep peace of is. Of course, if you're thinking too much, you won't find it. But if you're just looking and listening, the mind may have gone quiet, and the peace of is might be your present experience. And you might know in this moment that you can live like this. Because you don't really ever have to go back into the mind as if it's you, or the body as if it's you. You can allow them to be present, but you can remain as you are. I'm going to go back and play the song that I initially played before speaking. This will be our contemplation song. Again, if you'd like to make a donation during the song, you may. But I think I'd prefer, if you want to make a donation, that you do it afterwards. I would prefer you to stay in this experience of is as you listen to this song. Ooh. Does anyone want to share? All right, Gloria, the mic is yours.
Okay, good morning, and thank you for the reading this morning and the teaching. It was really something, an experience that I've had many times with awareness, watching awareness. But one thing that I noticed while we were doing the experience today, I was actually having a donut. I was having one of my favorite donuts from Dunkin' Donuts. And I'm having the experience of watching myself eat the donut, enjoy the donut, but at the same time observing that experience. So my experience was that I was drawn back very easily into the enjoyment of the donut, right? I could see that I was having the donut, but I was really drawn back into the enjoyment of the taste and the cold milk. And my question, I think, or my during contemplation, I discovered that that's the thing that I have. It's not that I don't experience that awareness, watching awareness, but when I'm operating in my everyday life, it's hard for me to pull myself back enough to be in that observer role because of this enjoyment, I guess, for experience, the enjoyment of the donut. That's always drawn my attention back into the experience and away from that looking perspective. So during contemplation, it really dawned on me that the experience and the experiencer they can't be separated in that way. The way that I struggled to try to separate them, I was trying to separate the looker from the experience of enjoying the donut this morning, and during contemplation, I really got that they can't be separated in that way. It has to be, for me anyway, during contemplation. That's what I discovered, that the enjoyment, the feeling of enjoying that donut can still be had from that looking perspective. And I also wanted to agree that the thoughts are much closer. That has definitely been my experience than the body. Experiencing the body, I can look at that, my body, much easier than I can my thoughts. It's much more difficult for me to separate the thoughts from that which is perceiving. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And if we had a long time, which we don't, but if we had a long time and we were continuing to do these exercises, another exercise that we would do is, first, it's always helpful to become very, very aware of what you are. It's helpful to do that first. But once you've done that, it's also helpful to notice that everything is in you. And because everything is in you, you can't actually call it separate from you. So it's kind of funny. You start off by, for lack of better words, separating yourself from the experience, looking at it. I call it backing up, backing up, backing up. But then, Gloria, what you stated is also true, is that it's in us. You cannot take, if you just look around the room right now, anything that your eyes land on, anything that you're feeling, is within your awareness. You can't cut it out and put it outside of your awareness. So nothing is separate from you. We would continue and we would look at those exercises too. Another exercise that we would look at, if we had a lot of time, which you just touched on, is we would actually look at the mechanism of attention. And we would notice that wherever attention is, that is experienced. Attention is the mechanism that allows an object to appear so close that it's experienced. And it seems to be what you are. Although, again, if you look even harder, you'll notice that you're before all of that. But we all experience this when we go to the movies, right? We allow our attention to go completely into the movie, and we're laughing with what's happening in the movie. We're afraid with what's happening in the movie. We're crying with what's happening in the movie because we allow our attention to go into it. And that brings it so close. So attention is that mechanism. So if we had, you know, a couple of days to do direct experience inquiry, we would look at all of this, and none of it would be intellectual. We would all experience it directly. The thing about direct experience inquiry is you have to put everything you've ever learned anywhere aside. And that includes everything you've learned from the world and everything you've learned from your spiritual study. If you cannot get out of the mind, you cannot practice direct experience inquiry. If you're going to keep believing the mind, you aren't going to be able to look. But you do have a direct experience, and that direct experience is undeniable. It's just somehow we've forgotten it because we've gotten so caught up in the mind. All right, so what I'm going to do now is just play our closing song, and maybe some of you have had a taste of direct experience inquiry, and maybe you want to play with it. That's how I started, was playing with it, whenever you remember to play with it. You know, maybe you're doing dishes, and you'll stop and you'll notice, oh, the smell of the soap, the feeling of the warm water, and then play with it. Notice, look at it. Maybe you'll have a headache or a pain in your ankle. And at first you're caught up in the headache and the pain of your ankle or whatever, but then you remember this. Then pause, stop, and look at it. Maybe you feel tired. You feel sleepy. Look at that. You'll notice you can even look at the sleepiness, the tiredness. Just practice looking. Play with it. And the more you practice looking, the more somehow the looking shifts into the foreground. And although everything keeps right on happening, you keep right on laughing, you keep right on talking, you keep right on working, the body continues to feel cold, the body continues to feel a pain here and there, somehow you're more aware that you're the one looking. It's like a four-dimensional movie, but you're looking. And that's when that deep peace that goes with the looking also comes forward into every experience. So play with it. And have fun. I'm going to play our closing song now, which is from Donovan. It's called Wear Your Love Like Heaven.
Color in sky, blush and blue. Scarlet fleece changes hue. Crimson ball sinks from view. Wear
Wear your love like heaven.
Today, and for those of you that were willing to practice those exercises with me to stop everything else and do that looking, I appreciate that. And again, have fun with it. Continue to play with it. The miracles that come from it, from just playing, are amazing. Bye-bye.